standing up. Manama,
bowed down.
Shirasa,
with his head.
Bhuvi,
on the ground.
Translation. And translation purports by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. The two lords then went to the house of the garland maker Sudama. When Sudama saw them at once, he at once stood up and then bowed down, placing his head on the ground. So we'll continue reading. 44. After offering them seats and bathing their feet, Sudama worshipped them and their companions with argya, garlands, pan, sandalwood paste, and other presentations. Sudama said, O Lord, my birth is now sanctified, my family free of contamination. Now that you both have come here, my forefathers, the demigods, and the great sages are certainly all satisfied with me. Because you two lords are the ultimate cause of this entire universe. To bestow sustenance and prosperity upon this realm, you have descended with your plenary expansions. Because you are well-wishing friends and the supreme soul of the whole universe, you regard all with unbiased vision. Therefore, although you reciprocate your devotees' loving worship, you always remain equally disposed towards all living beings. Please order me, your servant, to do whatever you wish. To be engaged by you in some service is certainly a great blessing for anyone. Shukadeva Goswami continued, O best of kings, having spoken these words, Sudama could understand that Krishna Balaram wanted it. Thus, with great pleasure, he presented them with garlands of fresh, fragrant flowers. Beautifully adorned with these garlands, Krishna Balaram were delighted, and so were their companions. The two lords then offered the surrendered Sudama, who was bowing down before them, whatever benediction he desired. Sudama chose unshakable devotion for Krishna, the supreme soul of all existence, friendship with his devotees, and transcendental compassion for all living beings. Not only did Lord Krishna grant Sudama these benedictions, but he also awarded him strength, long life, fame, beauty, and ever-increasing prosperity for his family. Then Krishna and his elder brother took their leave. Report. We can see a clear difference between Lord Krishna's dealings with the nasty washerman and his dealings with his devoted florist, Sudama. The Lord is as hard as a thunderbolt for those who defy him, and as soft as a rose for those who surrender to him. Therefore, we should all sincerely surrender to Lord Krishna, since that is clearly in our self-interest. Thus ends the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada to the 10th canto, 41st chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled Krishna and Balaram Intermatura. Om Gyan Tamrandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksur Limitamena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Panchakalpa Tirvishcha Kripa Sindhu Devicha Patitano Pavane Bhyo Vaishadeva Namo Namaha. So we only have one short purport here, but there's several very interesting and important points of philosophy within these verses that we'll try to touch upon, and I'll try to talk a little bit about at least Madhavendrapuri a little bit later, since it is his appearance day today. We see the contrast between Krishna's treatment of the washerman, who got his head cut off a few verses ago, and Sudama, his great devotee. So it's rather interesting that in verse 47, Sudama mentions, therefore, although you reciprocate your devotees' loving worship, you always remain equally disposed towards all living beings. So it might be asked, how is he being equal to all living beings when the washerman gets his head cut off and Sudama Brahma is given all these wonderful benedictions? But actually, Krishna is equally disposed towards all, and he's not partial. But yet, at the same time, he reciprocates, particularly with his devotees. Now, this probably reminds you of a verse in Bhagavad Gita, 9:29, Samahom sarvabhuteshu namedveshu stinapriya ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya maite teshu chapyaham. Krishna says, I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. So this is a very similar idea expressed in the Bhagavad Gita. The Krishna is not partial to anyone. He doesn't envy anyone. He is equal. But at the same time, there's a special relationship with his devotees. And Srila Prabhupada explains that seeming paradox in the purport. Prabhupada says, one may question here that if Krishna is equal to everyone and no one is his special friend, then why does he take a special interest in the devotees who are always engaged in his transcendental service? But this is not discrimination. It is natural. Any man in this material world may be very charitably disposed, yet he has a special interest in his own children. The Lord claims that every living entity in whatever form is his son, and so he provides everyone with a generous supply of the necessities of life. He is just like a cloud that pours rain all over, regardless of whether it falls on rock or land or water. But for his devotees, he gives specific attention. So naturally, one is going to be disposed towards one who is very loving towards one. Just as an example is given, that a person may be very charitably inclined, you know, towards anyone, and obviously be care about and be concerned about all children. But he's going to be particularly inclined towards their own children. And particularly if that child is very loving and very devoted, offers some service, you know, which of course the parent doesn't really need, you know, but still, just the fact that the child may offer something probably gives example. Just the father or the mother may give the child some money, and then that child takes that money and buys a birthday present or a present for them, and the parent's so pleased. Well, it's their own money, of course, but we're very pleased by that act of love or act of devotion from the child. In the same way, everything is coming from Krishna. Krishna is the source of all. He's the maintainer, he's the provider, and the supplier of all the material necessities. But if his devotees take some of that material energy or whatever and offer it back to Krishna, then he becomes very pleased. So Krishna is a little bit he's not partial, but he is inclined towards the devotion of those great devotees who offer back to him. So because of this devotion of this Sudama, the garland maker, Krishna offers him any benediction. And I think this is a very interesting part in these last couple of verses, between the benediction that Sudama asks for and then what Krishna gives him in return. Sudama, it says, he chooses the benediction of three things he wanted: unshakable devotion for Krishna, friendship with his devotees, and transcendental compassion for all living beings. Now think about this. You can get anything you want. God himself, the supplier of everything, saying, whatever you want, I will give you. And I imagine a garland maker is not a very wealthy person. I mean, I can't imagine that. He probably had very, very little that he was living on, just making garlands and selling them, whatever. But he wants unshakable devotion for Krishna. He wants friendship, association with devotees, and compassion for all living beings. This is the heart and the mind of a devotee. Not asking for something for themselves, but thinking of the welfare of others and thinking, I only want to be able to serve and to please Krishna. And what does Krishna award him? He gives him all this. Yes, of course you have that. He already has it. He gives him also strength, long life, fame, beauty, and ever-increasing prosperity for his family. So although these other benedictions, which might be considered material benedictions, were not asked for, or not even desired particularly by Sudama, they were given by Krishna out of love and reciprocation that he also wanted to give something to his devotee. I was thinking yesterday, of course, was appearance day of Lord Nrisimhadev, and the story of Lord Nrisimhadev in the Srimad Bhagavatam is largely the story of Prahlad Maharaj. Most of the chapters up until, let's see, Krishna doesn't even enter until about chapter 8 or Lord Nrisimhadev, until much later. So most of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 7th canto is about the glories of Prahlad Maharaj, Lord Nrisimhadev's great devotee, and all of his wonderful teachings. And this, and Sudama's asking for these benedictions, very reminiscent of Prahlad Maharaj. Because when Lord Nrisimhadev appeared to Prahlad, and he pacified him with prayers, no one else could go near him. Brahma, Shiva, any of the demigods couldn't even approach this fierce form of Lord Nrisimhadev. But Prahlad Maharaj, 5 years old, little boy, immediately goes to him. And Lord Nrisimhadev is pleased and pacified and stops his roaring, and his anger is subsided because of the wonderful devotion of Prahlad Maharaj and his prayers to him. So Lord Nrisimhadev asked Prahlad, "What I will give you any benediction." And what does he say? In Srimad Bhagavatam 7.10.4, Prahlad says, "You are so kind to your devotee that you cannot induce him to do something unbeneficial for him. On the other hand, one who desires some material benefit in exchange for devotional service cannot be your pure devotee. Indeed, he is no better than a merchant who wants profit in exchange for service. So this is the same expression of wanting nothing for oneself. Prahlada, and he goes on to say that the service itself is satisfying. This is all the devotee wants. The devotee wants devotional service to be the servant of the Lord, not that he wants anything from it, like a merchant, like you give me this and I give you that. It's not a material exchange. That's, of course, you know, that's more karmakanda. That is short of the mark of pure devotional service that the Vaishnavas demonstrate. And like Sudama, Prahlad also had this compassion for all living beings. So when he was more or less learned to Shingadev, he said, all right, that is okay, but still, I want to give you something. You know, still, please ask for something. So Prahlad says to him, showing the same kind of compassion, my dear learned Shingadev, I see there are many saintly persons indeed, but they are interested only in their own deliverance. Not caring for the big cities and towns, they go to the Himalayas or to the forest to meditate with vows of silence. They are not interested in delivering others. As for me, however, I do not wish to be liberated alone, leaving aside all of these poor fools and rascals. I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of your lotus feet, one cannot be happy. Therefore, I wish to bring them back to the shelter of your lotus feet. This is the wonderful expression of compassion and love that the pure devotee has for all living entities. His only desire is to bring them back to the shelter of Krishna. And of course, we saw this in so many devotees, and we saw this example of Srila Prabhupada, who had only that same desire that, against so many odds, facing so many obstacles, so much difficulty, to come to the Western world alone at an advanced age for the sole purpose of delivering the conditioned souls, following this mood of our great Vaishnavacharyas. So this is the mood of the devotee. And then, of course, Prahlad had only, he did have one request finally when Nrsingadeva pushed him. Well, ask for something. He says, all right, please forgive my father and liberate my father. Of course, Lord Nrsingadeva said, he is already liberated. He was killed. I killed him on my lap. So naturally, he is liberated. And no problem. But again, the only desire was for others, not for something for himself. Because, now, is this some sort of, you know, sense of, you know, martyrdom or suffering, or I'm just going to give up anything, or self-abnegation? No. It's because the devotee is completely satisfied with Krishna consciousness. Their own devotional service is giving them so much happiness, so much bliss, so much satisfaction that they don't need anything. It's not artificially, oh, I'm just going to be renounced, not take anything. No, they don't need anything or want anything because they have the highest thing of Krishna consciousness. So Krishna desires good for his devotees, and he reciprocates because he also wants to please them. So Sudama did not ask for anything, but Krishna gives him all of these material benedictions, including prosperity, because Krishna just wants to give back to his devotees. This is the nature of love, this give and take. So, all right, you don't want anything, but I'll give you something anyway. You know, sometimes it happens in families, or, you know, some birthday or something, and says, what would you like? Oh, I don't really want anything. But still, you want to give that person something. Even though they don't want anything, you still want to give them. So in the same way, Krishna's devotees say, I don't want anything, but he still, just out of his love, wants to exchange with them in that way. It's interesting that this is a garland maker's named Sudama, and of course we have the other Sudama Brahman, who's probably more famous than Krishna's childhood friend, who also was very, very poor. And his wife actually said, they were so poor, he said, you know, please, if you're going to go see your friend Krishna, maybe he can give us something, so at least we're not starving, you know. And he says, oh, okay, I will. And of course, then when he met Krishna and he brought his little bag, he had his little bag of chipped rice, and seeing Krishna's opulence, he was very ashamed. He didn't want to offer them just this very simple food when he could see that Krishna had so much opulence and he had everything. But Krishna, knowing his mind, says, what are you hiding there? And he grabbed his chipped rice and he ate it with great relish because it was coming from his devotee. And of course, Sudama really was too embarrassed to even ask for any benediction. But what happened the next morning when they woke up? They had complete opulence, prosperity, so many things. Even though Sudama did not even want to ask Krishna for this, and he was in an impoverished condition, Krishna supplied this. So Krishna gives the devotee what they need. He supplies all necessities to them. On the other hand, Krishna will sometimes withhold material things if it might be detrimental to the devotional service. And of course, this well-known verse from the Madhya Lila 22:39, Krishna says, if one engages in my transcendental loving service, but at the same time one's opulence and material enjoyment, he is very, very foolish. Indeed, he is just like a person who gives up ambrosia to drink poison. Since I am very intelligent, why should I give this fool material prosperity? Instead, I shall induce him to take the nectar of shelter at my lotus feet and make him forget illusory material enjoyment. Whenever Krishna is requested to fulfill one's desire, he undoubtedly does so, but he does not award anything which, after being enjoyed, will cause one to petition him again and again to fulfill further desires. For a less advanced devotee, Krishna may not fulfill material desires because it may not be in the interest of that devotee. To increase the love, to increase the renunciation, the devotion, Krishna will not always fulfill material desires. But for a pure devotee like Sudama, there's no impediment. Anything that they have which is material is simply used in Krishna's service, so Krishna can give them anything and everything. Of course, we also had this wonderful example. Today is the appearance day of Madhavendra Puri. And another very, very nice example of a great surrendered devotee who really wanted nothing from Krishna, but Krishna, again, reciprocates with him. It's kind of a long story. I don't know if I have time to read it all. But we know that basically Madhavendra Puri had discovered this Gopal deity, and he was set up the worship for him very nicely. And one time the Gopal deity came to him in a dream and asked him to collect sandalwood pulp for him. So he's traveling. He has to go all the way down to Orissa to get the sandalwood pulp from Vrindavan. And on his way, he stops in the town of Ramuna. And there's, of course, a very famous Gopinath temple in Ramuna. And he had heard about the wonderful worship and the offerings that were made to Gopinath. And Madhavendra Puri was thinking, oh, I could learn how to also worship my Gopal deity from the nice worship that's going on here for Gopinath. And he talked to the priests, and the priest said, in the evening the deities offered sweet rice in 12 earthen pots. Because the taste is so good, as good as nectar, it is called Amrita Kali. The sweet rice is celebrated throughout the world as Gopinath Shira. It is not offered anywhere in the world. And so Madhavendra Puri thought, if without my asking a little sweet rice is given to me, I can taste it and make a similar preparation offer my Lord Gopal. Now, to me, that sounds like a very innocent, devotional thing to think. How can I, maybe I can also see what this sweet rice is so I can offer it to my deity. But Madhavendra Puri became ashamed because he had desired to taste the sweet rice, thinking about how he might taste it before it was, thinking, well, it wasn't even offered yet. So he became very ashamed, and he simply left, and he went out into the village marketplace and sat in one of those little stalls, which you've all seen in India, there in the marketplaces. He's, you know, what goes for stores and shopping centers there. Anyway, so he's sitting out there. And what, of course, happens is the priest at the temple has a dream. And the deity, Gopinath, speaks to the priest and says, please get up and open the door of the temple. I have kept one pot of sweet rice for the sannyasi Madhavendra Puri. A sannyasi named Madhavendra Puri is sitting in the vacant marketplace. Please take this pot of sweet rice from behind me and deliver it to him. So he goes in, he wakens, he finds the pot of sweet rice that the deity had actually hidden. So when they took off all of the prasadam off the altar, he had hidden this and they didn't find this. And so it wasn't distributed. So he takes the pot of sweet rice and he goes to the marketplace and he's calling for, you know, is there a sannyasi named Madhavendra Puri? And so finally he comes out and, you know, identifies himself. And then he tells the story to Madhavendra Puri, and Madhavendra Puri just became ecstatic in love with Krishna. And of course, everyone was amazed by the story of Madhavendra Puri, and the word was quickly spread about what an incredible devotee this was, that the deity himself would hide this pot of sweet rice and save it, and in a dream tell the priest to give it to him. Of course, what did Madhavendra Puri do? He immediately left because he didn't want to be glorified. He thought, oh, now everybody's going to be, you know, coming around. And so he immediately left. And, of course, he relished that sweet rice. And he even broke the pot and taken a little piece every day of the pot that he would eat, you know, because it was prasadam. So this wonderful story about Madhavendra Puri shows us again this mood, this very wonderful mood of reciprocation between Krishna's devotees. The devotees wanting nothing but devotional service, and Krishna's wanting to give everything to his devotee. So we can see from these stories of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know, what is the mood of those exalted devotees? And then we can aspire a little bit for that. We can at least become, you know, in our heart, saying, this is at least the example. This is the target. This is the mood that we should be striving for. I thought there was one other interesting point in text 49. Okay, it says, O best of kings, having spoken these words, Sudama could understand what Krishna Balaram wanted. Thus, with great pleasure, he presented them with garlands of fresh, fragrant flowers. So, Krishna didn't actually ask him for anything. He's trying to say, well, what is it they want? And then, what should I give them? Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur says in his purport to this verse, he says, Sudama understood Krishna's command by realizing, I must give them garlands since I'm a garland maker. Now, it seems like a very simple point, but it's actually one of those things that's very simple and very profound. You know, what should I give Krishna? Give him what I do. Offer him what I can offer. What is my propensity? What is my position? What is my ability? Obviously, Krishna came to him. He's a garland maker. So he made beautiful garlands and offered them to Krishna and Balaram. So each one of us needs to serve from our position and ability. If we're a garland maker, you offer garlands to Krishna. If you're a cook, you cook for Krishna. If you're a mother, you make the offering of your children to Krishna. Each of us has that opportunity. And in fact, in household life, we have an opportunity to make a very wonderful service to Krishna. In this community of Alachua, I think we have, at last count, Mother Mama Maya is our official counter here. And would you say 350 families? 300, see, she's got it down to the number. I always exaggerate it, you know. But anyway, 330 families. Still, that's a lot of families in one Tibetan community. And so so it's a very special opportunity that we have, you know, that a mother or a father has the opportunity to offer the service to Krishna, that those children can become devotees, and they can be raised nicely in a spirit of Krishna consciousness, in a loving mood, so that they can continue this Krishna consciousness movement generation after generation. And this is what Srila Prabhupada wanted. He expected our children and our children's children would be those great devotees who would continue spreading Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement all over the world. But they will not become those great devotees unless they are trained nicely from an early age. And that is why a whole community, and especially the families and the mothers and the fathers, are so important in this process of Krishna consciousness. We see these wonderful examples. Just last night, we saw the wonderful dances by the girls, as Mother Mukhi mentioned in the announcements, it's not just that they're learning some skill, you know, they can do something and they learn some dance moves, but it's such a wonderful devotional mood. It's an offering to Krishna. And that, of course, all of our spiritual arts are like that. Everything we do is an offering to Krishna, our drama, our plays, our dance, you know, our philosophy. Everything that we do is an offering to Krishna. Similarly, a few days ago, they had a nice program over at the Bhaktivedanta Academy, where the children, it was a little fundraiser, which was incredibly successful, raising money for art projects. And I think it was so successful because everyone was so moved by the performances of the children. They had a very, very nice performance of where some of the older girls all recited by memory in dramatic fashion different prayers from the Srimad Bhagavatam by great devotees. And then they had a puppet show of the story of Daksha and Lord Shiva. And so seeing the children learning about Krishna consciousness, that everything they're doing is centered around Krishna, centered around Prabhupada, centered around the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is so enlivening to the hearts of the devotees. You know, and we're so happy to see Krishna consciousness continuing because it comes about so naturally and spontaneously from these children who are not yet spoiled by material sense gratification, at least not too much. You know, a little bit of propensity is there, of course, within all of our hearts. You know, but that propensity will soon be eclipsed by the experience and the enjoyment of Krishna consciousness. You know, Krishna conscious practice is able to purify and to clear away all of those little bit of remaining contaminations or material desires or material objects that we are looking for in this material world. So again, we have this very, very nice opportunity. And in fact, Grihastha life actually offers an opportunity for spiritual advancement. Sometimes in the scriptures, we see condemnations of household life or the deep dark well and things like that. And these things are indeed there in the scripture. But one should understand that this is discussion of materialistic household life. And Prabhupada makes a very important distinction between these two. I wanted to read a couple of Prabhupada's statements about the distinction between what's called Grihamedi life and Grihastha life. In Srimad Bhagavatam 6.5.42, Srila Prabhupada says, "Sometimes householders are accused of being Grihamedis, for Grihamedis are satisfied with family life without spiritual advancement. Grihasthas, however, are different, because although Grihasthas live in householder life with their wives and children, they are eager for spiritual advancement." And then in the Science of Self-Realization, Chapter 1, Srila Prabhupada says, "The Grihamedi should be regarded as a blind man driven ahead by uncontrolled senses about to fall into a ditch." So indeed, this is material household life. When one is absorbed in sense gratification, only concerned with material prosperity, getting ahead in life, to make material advancement, it is simply like a blind person falling into a ditch. This is an absolute fact that is given to us in Shastra. However, Prabhupada says, "The opposite of the Grihamedi, however, is the Grihastha. The Grihastha ashram, or the shelter of spiritual family life, is as good as the life of a sannyasi, a member of the renounced order. Regardless of whether one is a householder or a renunciate, the important point is that of relevant inquiries. The Grihamedi, however, is simply interested in the animal necessities of life. The Grihamedi life is full of calamities, whereas the life of the Grihastha is full of happiness." So, we call it the Grihastha ashram. There are four ashrams we know in spiritual life that are progressive, different stages of life. And the ashram means shelter. So whether one is in Brahmachari ashram or Grihastha or Vanaprastha or Sannyasa ashram, these ashrams are all meant to give one shelter. That means the shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. They are not meant to be something that is outside of the realm of Krishna consciousness or some deviation or some something that we have to somehow tolerate, until we can get out of it. No, the idea is that these are opportunities for spiritual advancement. And if one is intelligent, one takes whatever ashram one is situated in as an opportunity to make spiritual advancement, on this progressive path of Krishna consciousness. Not that one should be overly attached. One should not be overly attached to any situation or any ashram or to any particular situation, whether one is a devotee or not a devotee. And one must make Krishna the center. That is what distinguishes the Grihastha from the Grihamedi, that Krishna is the center, that everything is aimed at Krishna's service. Now sometimes you think, well, do I do everything, every moment of every day for Krishna? We may not directly, but we indirectly do. And if the consciousness is there, and if we are rightly situated in our sadhana, on the path of Krishna consciousness, then everything we do is for Krishna. Srila Prabhupada said, we do the morning program, we chant 16 rounds, said, then everything you do all day, all of your work, all your service is Krishna conscious. So in other words, if a devotee is chanting and following the regular principles, following the order of the spiritual master, and they have to go out and work a job all day, many are in that situation. That is not that they have some part of devotional service in their life and then most of their life is maya. That's the wrong understanding. The correct understanding, as Srila Prabhupada has given us, is that if one is situated in Krishna consciousness, then everything one does is for the ultimate purpose of Krishna consciousness. So one may have one's duties, one's dharma that one needs to do, for some period of time in their life. So one does those duties, one does that dharma in a happy state of mind, knowing that this is for the benefit of myself, for my family, for my children, so that they can all become absorbed in Krishna consciousness, make spiritual advancement, and come to higher and higher stages of realization. So we remember that Grihastha life is an ashram meant to serve Krishna. It is not a jail sentence. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Are there any questions or comments? Sure, Kram Prabhu.
Hello. Tarsus, dear. Siddhama seems to be also concerned about obligation to forefathers and demigods and stuff. I think it's mentioned there. But by pleasing the Lord, then all of these become pleased, and so he's happy about it. If you could, you know. So, even with us sometimes, or it says the living entities, they're all obligated to them too. But when we take up to Krishna consciousness, and those obligations are taken care of.
So you're saying when one takes up Krishna consciousness, it's said that all obligations are fulfilled. Was that your point?
God's son to the...
Yes, this is true. When we take up Krishna consciousness, we have fulfilled all material obligations, but we also have spiritual obligations. And again, the obligations that we have in Krishna consciousness should not be considered material obligations. Just like, you know, one is supposed to do so many things for one's parents, you know, in the Vedic rituals and offerings like that. Well, most of us, those of us who didn't come from devotee families, we don't do that. I don't see, you know, that I have these obligations to offer, you know, whatever, you know, offerings to my forefathers and ancestors and things like this, you know, because being a devotee, becoming a devotee is really the best thing we can do for everyone, and that is a fact. Yes, but in the process of becoming a devotee, we interact with everyone. It's not that I'm a devotee and, you know, just like Prahlad Maharaj said, it doesn't mean that I want to go off to the forest and just save myself. I fulfilled all obligations, you know, I become a devotee. I'm chanting Hare Krishna, no more. No, Prahlad Maharaj himself, who was probably, you know, I mean, we could argue that he's one of the greatest devotees, you know, in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He's saying, no, I'm not interested in just going off by myself, but I'm willing to stay here in this material world for the salvation of all living entities. You know, and so in the same way, as devotees, you know, we can understand that aspiration, but we may not in our hearts, you know, have that same kind of compassion to want to save all living entities. But at least let's try to save those around us, those that we have some influence, and also be saved, I should say, not just save them, but be saved by them. It's a mutual, reciprocal action of the association of devotees, which is so beneficial for all of us. You know, so they sometimes say charity begins at home. So if I have an opportunity to have influence of people that are around me, that are in my family or in my community, let's at least start there, you know, and give them Krishna consciousness as well. And both things are necessary. And I think that this balance is so important. I was just up in... I visited the Kentucky farm, Adikarta and Richira. They're very, very nice. And then I went down to Murari Sevak farm, and then I ended up in Birmingham, Alabama. We did a program for Lord Nrisimhadev's appearance on Sunday. And I was noticing about some of these smaller communities like that, like in Murari Sevak, and of course, it's mostly their family in Kentucky. But and also with this little congregation that's in Birmingham, they have a wonderful family feeling. You know, it's very, very nice. You know, they're very engaged in preaching, and we went out on Harinam, and they're distributing books, and they're trying to bring people and distribute prasadam. They're doing all of these, you know, they're doing the preaching mission. But they're also focusing on taking care of each other, too. Like that one program, they had a couple birthday cakes for devotees that were there, you know, like birthdays and anniversaries, and they were, you know, they were really focusing on making their community strong. So we need both. We need to have the preaching mission, and we don't want to lose that and become so absorbed in just taking care of my family that I'm no longer actively participating in Srila Prabhupada's mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And at the same time, you know, I don't neglect everything and everyone else around me, you know, because that association of devotees is so important. And the association of those people that we live with is probably the most important, most influential. So anyway, it's a balance. They both need to be there. Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhu, one thing that saves the griha from becoming a prison is giving up the fruits of your activities. Mm-hmm. What is expected of a devotee of Krishna in that respect, please?
That's a very, very good point about one of the roles, the obligations or duties of grihasthas is to give in charity, and of course particularly it's explained over and over again by Srila Prabhupada that best charity is to give in Krishna consciousness to help support the activities of Krishna consciousness. Of course, the way our present society is in Kali Yuga, you know, that ideal of like giving 50% was given there by the Goswamis. That's probably very difficult for most people. That's an ideal, you know, but at least something. Sometimes we see that, you know, some devotees are very generous, have very little, and they give what they can. Some devotees have more and maybe aren't quite so generous. So that's an individual thing. I think it's a matter of one's understanding and realization within the heart. But to give in charity, and especially to try to support the activities of Krishna consciousness, are very, very important. One thing I appreciate that this community is fairly good about that, supporting activities. I mean, Mother Mukhya, you know, one of her thankless tasks is she has to get up here and fundraise all the time, and you know, she's always asking for contributions for this or that or this festival. And by and large, our household or community does support a lot of these things. They do come through and they do give quite a bit. I mean, I think we could all do more. You know, it's not like we're totally satisfied. We could all do more, but I think that many devotees have that spirit, and they realize that, you know, part of the purification process of the house of the grihastha life is to use the fruits of one's work in Krishna's service. Yeah. Ramanya.
Thank you for your clarification and a nice lecture. You know, there's proper mentions in Chaitanya Chaitamrita, sometimes, there's more advanced householders in sannyasis. And he's the sample of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, great Paramahansa, he was a householder. So, and also when he sends the three couple of householders to preach in London, he said, they sent one letter, what my godbrother sannyasis didn't accomplish in London, my householder disciples accomplished. So he was happy with that. Of course, in the Shastras, we have to follow Guru Shastra and Sadhu, and like also Prabhupada made the statement, ISKCON is a big family, and sometimes we are one big, large family in ISKCON, right, all over the world. Like you mentioned, you go to different temples and you see the devotees. Sometimes we have to sometimes tolerate, you know, different types of preaching. But anyway, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. There wasn't a question there, right? It was more of a...
No, just
a statement. Okay. Yeah.
Talking about the service within the different ashrams, each ashram is for service to the Lord. Sometimes, like in a grihastha ashram or any ashram, one may be doing so well and, you know, serving the Lord and being fully... involved in service and like that. So sometimes, you know, I might feel that I'm doing so well, and others, you know, they are not really coming forward and doing, and that consciousness is sometimes there, that others are not doing so well. So what does one do to rectify that?
To rectify the consciousness, the feeling that one is doing better than others?
Looking down on them, not just, you know.
Well, you know, I think that's probably part and parcel of our whole sort of struggle in this material world towards purification. You know, our tendency, of course, is to be envious. That's why we're here in this material world. And sometimes we may not be very overtly envious, but there's those little subtle remnants of it. And actually, sort of a flip side or a different manifestation of that is, you know, being, you know, critical or negative towards others, or seeing that they're, you know, I'm doing better than they're doing. So in other words, you know, part of envy is that I'm envying someone who's doing better than me, but it's also then I'm being critical or I'm condescending or whatever to those that are lower than me or not doing as well. So these are all weeds in the heart and things that we need to, in fact, if you look at the Majjhima Adhikara, it's supposed to, you know, act in four ways. One, to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know, to serve the superior devotees, the spiritual master, to make friendships for those equal, and to give one's friendship and to help those who may be on a lower level of Krishna consciousness. You know, so if we find that somebody is not doing so well, then our obligation is actually to try to help them, to assist them, to befriend them, to help them to, you know, to come up in Krishna consciousness. You know. And generally speaking, my experience is that it isn't real helpful to just tell people of their failings. It's not usually appreciated very much and doesn't have a very good effect. I mean, better is, first of all, set a good example ourselves and just show our kindness and friendship to others. And if there's a relationship, then one can preach to others. You know, but without the relationship, it's very difficult. It's very difficult. It's difficult to help others, you know, if you're coming from a superior position. I don't know if that exactly answered. Okay, anything else? No. Question?
It's just a quick question. And you were speaking about Madhavendra Puri. We always hear that he kind of, with him sort of came the Radha Krishna understandings in our
yes.
line. So does that pretty much mean that before his time, like all these ancient temples, it was just deities of Krishna?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm not real good on the history of it. The question about Madhavendra Puri, and of course I could have given a whole class on Madhavendra Puri. There's so many wonderful things. And of course he was the spiritual master of Ishvara Puri, the spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Godbhara Advaitacharya, etc., in that generation. And yes, it's described that he really established the Radha Krishna worship. Now there's some evidence. His spiritual master was Lakshmipati, wasn't it? I believe. And I think that he also began a little bit of the introduction of Radha Krishna worship, and then Madhavendra Puri really fulfilled it. I'm not sure if there was like no Radha Krishna worship anywhere before that, or any temples of Radha Krishna. I mean, we know there was worship of Krishna, you know, and there's because I know even some of the devotional songs like Mirbai and like that predate the Goswamis in that time, so or were contemporary. So I'm actually I really don't know.
Oh, no,
can anybody answer that question? Was there worship of Radha Krishna deities before Madhavendra Puri?
Like you always hear.
This is where we need Chaturatma or something.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Shesha, bro?
There was a controversy in Jaipur, and it was specifically because the Gaudiyas were worshipping Radha with Krishna, and the Ramanandis, who are followers of, I think, maybe Ramanujacharya from the south. They objected that, you know, you can't worship Radha and Krishna together like this. I believe that was their
What was
complaint.
The time period then?
That was during the time of Baladev Vijayabhusan and even after, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Goswamis.
Because Baladev Vijayabhusan was Shiksha, disciple of Vishwanath Chakravarti, which means 1700s.
Yeah, so it was during that time, after the Goswamis, and they were objecting to Radha Krishna worship.
So it wasn't really well established.
Yeah, there was. That's an indication that there maybe wasn't so widespread worship of Radha Krishna.
Right. And of course we know the Goswamis in, 1500s, basically established the Radha Krishna temples in Vrindavan. My understanding is that was at least the first widespread worship of Radha Krishna. Now, whether there was anywhere, I don't know.
Lakshmi Narayan.
Lakshmi Narayan, was Narayan worship was probably the primary before that. Yeah.
Established the temples and the worship of Radha Krishna.
Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.